Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining the National MS Society Communicating Tools for Maintaining Good Relationships. Your host, Tiffany Gordon, will begin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the call with the National MS Society. This is Tiffany Jordan, and I'm just going to read a brief introduction about our presenter, Catherine Freemeyer. She's a licensed clinical social worker who offers individual, couple, and family therapy as well as life coaching. She also teaches for San Francisco State University and JFK University. She has developed a specialty in working with individuals who have a chronic medical condition and their partners. She has been a dynamic presenter at the MS Support Group Leader Conferences and has taught monthly teleconference workshops for the National MS Society's Emotional Wellness Series for the past 5 years. She helps her clients to live lives of joy, balance, and meaning, even when facing a hardship like a chronic illness. Catherine, we now turn the time over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tiffany. And I just want to say to all of you out there that I'm very appreciative and honored to be on the call tonight with you. And to let you know, I've done many, many teleconference workshops for the MS Society, but this is the first one with everyone being muted. So I just want to say I appreciate you coming to the workshop tonight, even though I can't hear your voices. And hello to those of you who have come to one of my talks in the past. So let's begin. I suggest you get a paper and pen handy to take a few notes if you're able. And I want to say to stay to the end of the call because I'm going to ask you to share a pearl in about the last 3 minutes of the call. And that is, you'll say your first name and then one thing you're going to take away from the call tonight that you felt was helpful and that you want to remember. Okay? I will also pause a couple times during my talk to ask for questions. So feel free to jot down a question if it arises for you while I'm talking, and you can ask it when Katina opens it up for questions. So the topic tonight I've broken down into three areas. Tools for creating positive emotion within relationships, tools for making requests, and tools for making repairs in relationships. All this is about communication. So the first area, creating positive emotion in communication. Why? What are the three basic reasons, the importance of consciously creating positive emotion in relationships in our communication? Well, first, neuroscientists tell us that we have a negativity bias in our brains. So we give more attention to the negative in order to correct it or to keep it from happening again. So over time, we tend to see more of the negatives in a relationship, and then the negatives, unfortunately, wash away the positives. So the research tells us we need to consciously create 5 positives of interaction with another person to offset the 1 negative. So just keep that ratio in mind. 5 positives for every 1 negative. Not 2 for 2, not 3 for 2, 5 to 1. This creates a kind of positive override, or some people call it a positive emotional bank account, that we can hold that goodwill when the negative happens. Okay? So we've all heard that we have to have healthy conflict communication, which is true, but even more important is we need to consciously build in moments of positive communication. So 2 tools that I'm going to talk about for that tonight. 1, words of affirmation, and the 2nd, meeting the other person's joy. So let's start with words of affirmation. Be generous with words of affirmation. Over time in relationships, we often take things for granted and get lazy or forget to express words of affirmation to the other, especially people closest to us. So getting back to offering that affirming communication can enliven a relationship and help bring it out of a negative or a stagnant place. I'm going to share 4 types of words of affirmation. First, words of gratitude. Express your gratitude and appreciation freely, even for expected tasks. For example, thank you for making dinner. Thank you for folding my laundry. Thanks for putting gas in my car. I really appreciate that. Don't wait for the extraordinary to express your thankfulness or appreciation. Express gratitude for the ordinary. Next, give compliments. Be specific when you give compliments. For instance, thank you for making me dinner. It was really creative and delicious. Or, you look great in that new shirt. Or, I love how you are so supportive of our son with his musical pursuits. The third type of words of affirmation is to expand the compliment to a positive story about the person. In other words, you're making their good action, you're expanding it to equal a talent or a positive personality trait of theirs. For example, you are such a good cook. You can whip up something tasty with just a few ingredients. Or, you are such a good money manager for our family. Thank you for taking that area over. Or, you're such a great storyteller. You know how to really keep people engaged. We may think these things in our relationships with people, but we neglect to express them. And the last one, words of admiration and respect. Express your admiration for the person's process, not just a successful outcome. In other words, praise process like persistence, hard work, focus, integrity, fairness, and resilience. There's research about raising kids which tells us that admiring the person's process is better than admiring the final outcome. It affirms their ways of being. For example, I am so happy for you that you did well on that exam, but I am most proud of how focused and organized you were with studying for the exam. Or, I just love watching you paint. You really get into the flow, and you're so creative. I'm going to pause there and ask for questions. So, Katina, if you want to open up the line. And the way that we do this is that you just say your first name and ask your question.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Our first question is going to come from Emma. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted you to give a couple more examples on the third point, expanding a compliment.
Oh, good. So the theory behind it is that compliments are very often about appearance, or they're about an action. And what you want to do is you want to expand it into a quality of the person. So it's more about their personhood than about an action or their appearance. So that's the story behind it. That's the theory behind it. So rather than saying, oh, that was a great story you told, you're going to expand it to be, and you know what? You really are such a great storyteller. So that's more about their personhood. Does that make sense, Emma?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. Any other questions?
Yes, ma'am. Our next question is going to come from Donna. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. I'm following you on how to give compliments, but I've run into people who they don't know how to take a compliment, and when I try to give these compliments and maybe expand upon it, they get very uncomfortable or perhaps even distrustful. And what's a good way to handle that?
Well, it's a really good question, and there are absolutely people who have a hard time receiving compliments. So everybody on the line, I'm glad Donna's brought this up. You want to practice receiving compliments gracefully. So when somebody compliments you, you want to say, thank you. Appreciate that. Just a thank you, simple thank you. If you give the compliment and it is rejected, that is considered, the person is usually is feeling like they're being humble, they're practicing humility. So what you want to say is, no, I really mean it, so just take it in. Something like that.
Thank you.
I really mean it, so just take it in.
Okay.
If you know it's somebody who's really uncomfortable with compliments, make sure it's not a big song and dance. Okay, because they can't sort of tolerate it. So keep it very simple. Thanks, Donna. And let's take one more question for this section.
Yes, ma'am. Our next question is going to come from Kathy. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was curious, you kind of briefly mentioned healthy conflict.
Yes.
I'm not sure about what that was.
Okay. That's about, there's a lot of research and articles written around how couples need to have healthy conflict communication. In other words, how they resolve conflict. And I'm actually, that's going to be the second half of my talk tonight. But what I wanted people to hear is there has been additional research showing that creating positive emotion in the relationship is as important, if not more important, than resolving the negative. So we need to do both. We need to build the positive in, and we need to resolve the negative. Okay, Kathy, so I'm going to get to how to repair the negatives in the second half of the talk tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so now I'm going to move on, Katina. So thank you for that. This, again, is very different for me. I've never had this format for asking questions, but I really appreciate people speaking up and asking them. That's fantastic. Okay, so now the second area. As far as creating positive emotion in our communication, the first was words of affirmation. The second one is what I call meeting the other person's joy. Meeting the other person's joy. I use the word joy as a catch-all for any positive experience that is expressed. So I'm just using it as shorthand. There's research at UC Riverside showing that how a couple handles each other's joy is more important with relationship satisfaction, how they rate their relationship satisfaction. It's more important than how they handle conflict. Okay? So how people handle each other's joy is very, very important in any relationship, really. Parent-child, spouse or partner, life partner relationships, co-worker relationships, and friends. Okay? So what does meeting a person's joy mean? That is, when the person shares with you a positive in their life, you express enthusiasm back to them, you join them in their joy, and then you show interest by asking a couple of questions. For example, let's say the person comes home and shares good news. This could be a daughter, a son, or a spouse. Guess what? I was just told today I'm being promoted to sales manager. You want to respond in an active, positive way by expressing affirming words and then showing interest by asking a couple of questions. So it would sound something like this. That is so wonderful. That shows how your hard work is being seen. How did they tell you? What will this mean for you as far as your new responsibilities? Okay, that's meeting the other person's joy. What if they share with you just an inspiring story they heard on TV? For example, they say to you, oh, I just watched this interview with Diane Nyad today. She's the swimmer who swam from Cuba to Florida at age 60 after she'd failed 4 times in her 30s. She was so inspirational. So the person sharing their joy with you. So how do you meet that? You would say something like, wow, that sounds really amazing. I love inspiring stories too. Tell me more about her. And what did you hear that inspired you? Okay? So just take this away. It's called How Do You Respond to a Person's Joy? Do You Meet Their Joy? And I want you to observe your own reactions after the call tonight and observe how other people are responding to your joy, how you're responding to people's joy, be it a child, a coworker, a spouse, a friend, and how other people respond to your joy. You will find that some people do not meet your joy. They don't have much of a response when you share a positive story. It kind of falls flat. Or sometimes people will actually have a negative response to your joy because it threatens them in some way or triggers some negative in them. For instance, if we go back to the Diane Nyad story, you could have a very passive, flat response. Oh, that's nice. Or a negative response could be, oh, I heard about that swimmer and how some people, you know, wondered if she had cheated in some way because it's such an impossible swim. Again, they don't meet your joy and the story falls flat and your emotions fall flat. So here's an opportunity to create positive emotion by meeting the joy, but some people are really, really not good at that. So you want to practice meeting the other person's joy. Okay, let me open up for questions for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. And our first question is going to come from Laura, I think. Please go ahead.
What happens when someone doesn't meet your joy and you're really crushed?
What right.
would be an appropriate response?
Well, is this Laura?
Yes.
Liz?
Yes.
Yes. Hi, Liz. Well, do you know that crushing feeling? Have you felt that?
Yes.
We all have. So that's why this is such an important communication tool, okay? Well, what I like to do is if it's people that I'm going to be seeing a lot, like a spouse or a grown child that I'm still living with, or a friend. And what I'm going to assume is they don't realize they're not meeting my joy. They don't realize how deflating it is. So I'm going to tell them I learned about something in a class and I had never thought of it in this way and that I was going to and share it with them. Okay. And then, for instance, my husband and I actually teach a course on the art and skill of a happy marriage. And we role play this so that if I share my joy with my husband and he gives me kind of a flat response because he's internal and he's thinking about something else or he's distracted and he goes, oh, that's nice. And then I'll look at him and I'll go, honey, you're not meeting my joy. And then we laugh. So if you can have sort of a conversation with the person to say, this is important, and I want to practice it with you, and I want you to practice it with me, that would be really a good start. Okay?
Thank you.
Good. And I'm going to not take another question, but I need to move on just because of time right now. Okay? If you had another question, jot it down and then try it in the other question period. All right, now next in our series tonight is around assertive communication, around making requests. And this is especially important. This is, you know, assertive communication is important for everyone, but especially when someone is dealing with a chronic medical condition like MS. So what I want people to get really good with is making clear requests from their caretakers, from their spouses, from their family members, and from doctors, okay? So although you and the other person may have your differences, your different ways of looking at life, your different ways of looking at MS, your different ways of looking how to be in the world, you want to just feel like you are equally entitled to express yourself. Each of you is equally entitled to express yourself, but it's to express yourself constructively. Okay? And when you communicate assertively or constructively, you will notice you will get more of your needs met. And I can tell you, not 100% met, because that's not usual in life. You will get more of your wants met, more of your needs met. And you will also notice your self-esteem improve. And you may feel less stress, and it may be easier to resolve problems. So the idea is you want to make clear requests for things that you need and want rather than making complaints. Requests, not complaints. That can be your mantra. So when we look at assertive communication, we have the whole continuum of passive, aggressive, assertive, and passive-aggressive. Phrases like "you always" and "you never" are clues that you are making a global complaint, and it will inevitably trigger defensiveness from the other person rather than receptivity to your request. And the whole thing is you want to build, you want to trigger receptivity to your request. That's why you don't want to move into the complaint category, because then people block it with defensiveness. So let's say your need is that you want to get out more with your partner on the weekends. You're feeling bored and stagnant staying home so much. So a passive request or a passive approach, an approach would be to say something like, "Honey, don't you want to do something besides watch TV tonight?" Notice, very often, around your wants and needs, asking a question is more passive than making a simple statement. Then there's the aggressive approach. "You are such a couch potato, I can't stand it. You never want to go out and do anything." Okay? The assertive, healthy way is to make a clean request with no criticism tainting it. Even though you feel the criticism is true, it doesn't serve you. It blocks receptivity. It's better to focus on using I statements about your own desire or need. Don't speak about what's good for them. Use an I statement and speak about yourself, and lead with desire and eagerness rather than with anger. I'm going to say that again. Lead with desire and eagerness rather than with anger. So the assertive request could sound something like, "Honey, I really want to get out with you on the weekends and do something fun. I'd like to go to the movies or the new exhibit at the De Young Museum. Which would you prefer to do with me?" So you are making a statement, and the question is only looking for a preference from the other person. So that is considered an assertive, clean request. If they tell you, "Yes, I'd like to do the movie," or "I'd like to do the museum," then thank them. Say, "That's great, thank you," and then make a plan and go for it. So you do express your gratitude and appreciation, and then you make a plan and you follow through. If instead you get pushback in some way, passively or aggressively, you want to empathize with the other person's point of view and restate your request. For instance, if the person pushes back and says, "I'm tired from working and traveling all week, so I don't have the same need to go out as much as you do." Well, that's very true for that person. So you would validate their experience, restate your request, and make a proposal or suggest a compromise that addresses both of your points of view, rather than argue whose need is more important. So you could say something like, "I understand you have had a tough schedule this week, but I still really want to go out this weekend and I want to be with you." So notice desire. It's all desire, no anger. And then you could say, "How about we stay local? And rather than trek into San Francisco to the museum, why don't you take a nap on Saturday and we can go out Saturday night to the movies? How does that sound?" So you are proposing a compromise or a solution that is taking into account both of your needs. If you still don't feel heard, do not attack or walk away. Don't throw the towel in on your request. State calmly that you are not feeling heard and ask the other person to hear you out and that you want to work out a doable compromise. Hang in there. Don't move into anger and don't move into withdrawal. Okay? Restate your request and say you really want to work out a doable compromise. Okay, I'm going to pause there and take another question or two.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. There's no one in queue at this time.
Okay, very good.
I'm
going to now
I'm
move
sorry.
On. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We have a question from Emma. Please go
good.
Ahead.
Go ahead, Emma.
I don't know if this clearly fits in. It's maybe a hybrid between meeting people's joy and assertive communication. It has to do with going to MS groups and talking to people that maybe you'll see again and maybe you won't see again.
Okay.
But I find it hard to express my joy about, say, if I'm recovering from something or not. I sometimes feel like people hear it as criticism or like as highlighting the fact that they're not recovering from a certain thing. So the other person was asking about getting this crushing reaction when the other person is not responding
yes.
to your joy. Do you have any thoughts about how to express
Emma,
a joy to someone who maybe isn't in a place to hear the joy or something?
It is such a great point and a great question. It really is. And it's also, I gave one whole workshop on how to deal with MS socially. Both in MS support groups, with friends, with partners. So, there's a lot to say about it. It's a really, really good point. So, this is where your joy could be threatening to someone.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, though, I've also heard how people expressing improvement is heartening to some other people in the group.
Mm-hmm.
You see? That it can give them some hope and that it can make them feel like, oh, maybe there's something that I can do with my relapsing, remitting MS or whatever the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to keep in mind that, yes, it may be threatening, and, yes, it may be heartening.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know what it's going to be? You really don't. It's very complex. So what I would advise is for you to say is to preempt your comment. Preempt means... say out loud your fear. So, for instance, people who are afraid of public speaking would say, I'm a bit nervous. I'm not great at public speaking, but I'm very happy to be here tonight. So, bear with me if I stumble along. So you would be saying something like, I want to share some improvement that I've had, and I don't want it to feel negative to anyone. I don't want anybody to feel like I'm sort of bragging. I'm more wanting to share it to give other people hope.
Okay.
Does that resonate?
Yeah, it does.
Good. So when you're fearing, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings or you don't want to preempt it and say, I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but I wanted to share that, I've made some progress or a new medication has really helped me or, I was able to do yoga and I haven't been in the past and I'm really excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then count on, a couple of people in the group being able to meet your joy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, great.
Thank you so much, Emma.
We have a question for Laura. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question about, I have a husband that is a lot older than I am, and he never wants to go anywhere. I hate to say that, but he does the shopping and a lot of cleaning for me. And he just is not, he was in the service for 22 years and he went all over the world. And I was the type that barely got out of where I lived.
Yes.
And I don't know what to do because I just get frustrated.
Right. So how do you handle it?
Well, I usually don't pursue it. I take off and maybe go thrift store shopping or something just to get, it's like I'm running away from him not wanting to do things with me.
Uh-huh. Have you stopped asking?
No.
How do you ask?
Honey, why don't we go to the park this weekend because it's free and we can spend the day there.
Okay, so I'm going to pause you. Notice you asked a question. Why don't we go to the park?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I want you to try is, and I don't think for a second that this is going to be the full solution, but I just want everybody to hear and to practice saying, honey, I really want to go to the park this weekend, and I really want to go with you. Tell me what would be the better day, Saturday or Sunday?
Okay.
I want you to be clearer and more specific and not say, why don't we go? Because he's going to say, no, I don't need to go.
Yeah.
Instead, I want you to say, I want to go and I want to go with you. You're my man and I want to go to the park and it's for free. And let's go. I know you don't like to, go out much. So let's go from, 12 to 3. Or, if he says something like, yeah, but once we get out, you start shopping around and it takes too long, say, okay, how about we stick to a time frame? In other words, you try and work out a compromise.
Oh, okay. That sounds...
Okay, but make the I statement of desire and tell him you want him to go with you.
Okay.
Just try it.
That sounds,
okay?
That sounds
beautiful.
Better.
Okay, we have to move on only because of time. And the next section is making repairs in relationships. So the research shows that even the best and closest relationship will hit bumps in the road. This is inevitable. This includes relationships between spouses, between parents and children, between friends, and between coworkers. This is normal, even in the best of relationships. The problem is that most people are not taught how to make repairs in their relationships when there's been a misstep. And it's also not modeled to them. I actually think it would be a great life skills class to teach in high schools. So let's think of the repair as a skill to develop. It's a communication skill. If we look at other areas of life, for instance, let's say knitting, the best and most experienced knitters will still make errors as they are knitting. But part of their expertise in knitting is knowing how to repair their error and get right back on track knitting. Knitters accept that making errors is part of knitting, but they're confident that they know how to repair the error. Then let's look at car owners. The best car owners are those who make sure to make consistent repairs on their cars to keep them running smoothly and to ward off a bigger breakdown. In the same way, relationships need to have ongoing repairs done to avoid the bigger breakdown. And people in relationships need to learn and practice the skill of repairs. John Gottman, you can Google him, is a psychologist and researcher. And he he's shown in his studies that the ability to make and receive repairs consistently is one of the keys to a happy, committed relationship. And I'm going to extend that to a happy friendship, a happy co-parent relationship, a parent-child relationship, etc. The ability to make and receive repairs when there's been conflict. So what's the definition of a relationship repair? A repair is an attempt to restore the positive connection when there's been a negative moment or a disruption in the goodwill between two people. For a repair to work, one person needs to initiate it and the other person needs to receive it generously. I'm going to talk about 8 types of repairs when there's been a small bump in the road that's created a minor irritation or conflict in the relationship. And then I'm going to end the talk tonight talking about if there's a bigger disruption. Okay? So these are repairs that are needed in the midst of everyday life. Okay? Feel free to jot down the title of the 8 repairs just to remind yourself. So the first one is letting go. This is something you do internally. You don't do it with the other person. When your partner or your friend has had a moment of imperfection, a moment of not being their best self, you repair it by simply letting it go. You let go of your irritation. You cut them slack without requiring an apology. You remember that they give you other positives. And you might also remind yourself that there is a positive side to their irritating behavior. Ironically, you may have been initially attracted to some aspect of the very quality that you're now irritated by. Okay? You also want to remember that you too are imperfect. So you want to just forgive, not comment on it, and let go of the irritation. So that's the first type of repair. The second is to admit the misstep, give a mini apology, and get back on track. I'll say that again. Admit the misstep, give a mini apology, and get back on track. This is the knitting metaphor, right? So mini apologies that are genuine and fitting to the situation have the power to repair tension, minor arguments, and disconnects very quickly. But some people have a hard time with just giving a mini apology. So if you're one of those people, you want to practice it. You want to just push yourself, get that apology out. So here's an example. You're talking, your partner or your friend is talking, and with excitement, you want to say something and you interrupt them. And then they say, gosh, you know, you just interrupted me. So what you want to do is you want to admit the misstep, give a mini apology, and get back on track. So it sounds something like this. Oh, you're right. I did interrupt you. I'm sorry. Go back to what you were saying. I'm really interested. So remember, it's important that the receiver of the repair attempt accepts it. Okay? You don't want to have the receiver expanding on the error. So a way to expand on the error would be to say, you are always interrupting me. Ah, that's not accepting the apology and getting back on track. So if you get a mini apology your way, you want to just say, thank you for noticing that. And then you want to continue with your story. Number 3 of the 8, use non-hurtful humor or playfulness to diffuse the tension. Okay? Now, humor is one of the most important things to keep a positive emotion in a relationship. Humor, playfulness, lightness. We get so serious. Life is hard enough. We need to keep a playful, humorous, not hurtful humor, not sarcastic humor, but playful humor in the relationship. So you want to think about how to keep it light and how to use your humor. Okay? I'll just give one example. This would be because I'm a very passionate person. So sometimes I'll say something really strongly to my partner, not even about him, but about life or about something I really hate. Okay? And then he looks kind of like shocked, or his eyes kind of go up like a deer in the headlights. And I see his sort of negative reaction. For instance, the way a coach handled the girls playing soccer, I thought that, you know, he was way too critical and really putting down the girls. Okay, so I say, I really hate how that coach handled that. I'm telling my husband, I think it's totally wrong, it's absolutely terrible, and I see him kind of glaze over. And then I paused and I said, don't you just love how passionate I am? Aren't you so happy you married me? Okay, so this is a funny way, it's playful, in order to just kind of break the tension in the room. Okay? So please reclaim your humor and your playfulness and start interjecting it into your communication and your relationship. Number four, another kind of repair is to make a caring or validating comment right when you're within an argument. This can immediately change the climate of the argument and help to ease it. For instance, you could say, or remember, a caring or a validating comment to the other person. In the middle of an argument, you could say, you know, I really get that this is a very sensitive topic for you. You know, let's keep talking till you feel understood. Or, you know, I really do respect your opinion, and I want to resolve our difference in this situation. I really do. Number five, own your own negative feelings in the moment rather than acting them out. That would sound like this. Oh, sorry, I know I'm being grouchy. I'm feeling really stressed right now about work, and I didn't mean to take that out on you. Or, I had a really bad day with the MS, so that's why I was just short with you right now. But let me take that back. Okay. Number six, make it clear you're on common ground. It's a very beautiful way to create a repair when there's tension and conflict. It would sound something like this. I really want us both to feel good about our decision. That's if you're struggling about making a decision on something. Or, I really want us both to have our concerns heard. We both deserve that. Or, you know what? I believe we both have insights into this situation, so let's take turns hearing each other out. You're putting each other on common ground. Number seven, playfully cue, that's C-U-E, playfully cue your partner to give you a corrected response rather than getting angry at them. So, for instance, that was the example of if my husband doesn't meet my joy, I am playful and I say, honey, you're not meeting my joy, try it again, okay? Or if you propose something and your partner says, oh my God, that is ridiculous, we can't get that all done. You can cue them by saying, let's do a redo. I know what you really wanted to say was, honey, you're so creative, but I'm a little concerned that'll take us too much time. So you call a redo and you cue. You let the person know what would have felt better to hear instead. Okay? And then the last, number eight, and this is for repairing minor irritations or disconnections, and that's to initiate a non-verbal action. Sometimes that works better with certain temperaments. Just give a hug, suggest a walk together, or offer them some tea. So it's a non-verbal kind of peace offering. Okay? So that is for minor irritations and minor disconnections. But what if the repair, what if there is a bigger conflict? What do you do? Two things. One is, if an argument is getting too heated and is continuing for more than 15 minutes and is escalating, you really need to take a time out and just say, you know what, let's take a time out. This is getting too heated. Okay? And you literally take a break, but you agree to resume when you're both calmer. And what the research tells us is that it takes at least minimum 20 minutes for a person to soothe themselves and get their body calmed down physiologically. So it's best to agree on a time to resume the talk that is at least 20 minutes so that people can soothe themselves and calm down. Okay? So take a time out. If it's not escalating, but there's been a bigger conflict and instead there's distance, you haven't talked to each other for hours, or for some people that I've worked with, they go days without talking with one another. Okay? One person needs to initiate and set up a time to talk. And here's a way to say that. I want us to resolve our conflict. Let's set up a time to talk. So do not ambush the person while you're on a date with them and bring up the problem. Okay? You set up a separate time to talk to address the issue. You ask the other person to hear you out, and you calmly express your hurt or your upset or your anger. And then the other person needs to validate something about your experience. And then if they go first, you validate their experience and you state your own. So what you're hearing me say is, even more important than I statements, is that each person needs to express their point of view, and then they need to validate something in what the other person expresses. This is called mutual empathy. So you are practicing mutual empathy. And you can actually say, okay, I heard this in a class. You know, we're having a conflict. Let's practice mutual empathy, which is you say how you're feeling, and I'm going to validate something that you've said, and then I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling, and you're going to validate something that I've said. Okay? So, for example, it could sound something like this. I can see why you felt impatient with me and hurt, but I was needing time to decompress when I got home. So there's the validation, and then the person states their need. Oh, I didn't finish it out. I can see why you felt impatient and hurt with me. I was needing to decompress when I got home, and that's why I put you off. And the other person then can respond and validates first, says, I can understand why you need time to decompress after a hard day, but your actions and the tone of your voice made me feel like a second-class citizen. So each person is expressing their issue and validating the others. That's the mutual empathy. Okay? Then you problem solve. After mutual empathy, you problem solve. You talk about how to handle the issue differently in the future so that the disruption or the distance does not happen again. Or how do you need to handle it so the conflict does not escalate to an unhealthy level where there's screaming and they're swearing, and there's any kind of physical hammering of tables or walls or any kind of physical violence. So, for instance, in this case, this couple could decide that when the husband gets home from work, he's going to say hi to his wife, he's going to greet her, and then he's going to go up to change and decompress for 10 minutes, and then they're going to reunite in the family room for a 20-minute reconnection talk about their day, what the high points and the low points are. So now they have agreement. They have a ritual, a reconnecting ritual that allows him to have his decompression and allows her to have time to connect. Now, if there is a huge, unhealed, major wound or volatile, recurring issue in the relationship that you all have not been able to talk through and solve, please seek professional help from a mentor, a therapist, a religious leader, whoever you feel like will be a good counsel to you and a good support to you. Okay? Don't hesitate to seek that. What the research shows is that couples, for instance, come into therapy 6 years too late, so that the unresolved issue has been brewing, you know, for 6 years. Okay? So that is the end of the talk tonight. So first, I'm going to open it up for questions, and I'm going to let you ask a question on any part of the talk tonight. And then in the last 3 minutes, we'll move to people sharing their pearls, a helpful thing they're going to take away from the call tonight. So let's just start with opening it up for questions.
Also, as a reminder, after the pearls section of the call, we have a three-question polling after that. Okay. Our first question is going to come from Kathy. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was curious about some of the programs that are out there sometimes when it comes to communication, like maybe a forum, a landmark forum, or something that is engaging in, or a book or something, and I was just wondering your thoughts on those and maybe suggestions of a read to read.
Really good. I don't have programs right at my fingertips, but I would recommend John Gottman and his books. That's G-O-T-T-M-A-N. And one of them has in it something like the 7 principles of a happy marriage. So that's if it's about an intimate relationship. The other one that I think is good is How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. So actually that's very different than communication, but rather looking at couples need to have time to reconnect more so than ever. And so that's a good one, How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. Pardon me, this is with your daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of any more general, you know, I don't have it right now at my fingertips, but I'm going to give you my email.
Which is
everybody can take down. I'm very, just by giving this talk today, consider me a resource to you. And you can email me, and it's my full email is Coach Freemeyer, so it's like life coach, C-O-A-C-H, and Freemeyer is F-R-E-E-M-I-R-E @gmail.com. And if you miss that, you can call the MS Society, either Tiffany here or the Northern Branch, and they can get my email to you. Anybody else have another question?
Yes, ma'am. Our next question is going to come from Susan. Please go ahead.
This is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. How do you talk to a know-it-all?
Well, you're already telling me that's challenging, right?
My best friend's husband is so obnoxious, and he just drives everybody nuts.
Right. So one thing to think about is that if somebody doesn't meet your joy and somebody's really difficult, because they're a know-it-all, my first line is to say, have less contact with them. Don't try and change them. Don't try and point things out. And especially if they steal your joy and they're very negative, I would say just gradually spend less time with that person. Okay? Now, if, for instance, you are best friends with her husband and you all do things as couples together and you're saying, well, I don't think I can cut back on that, then I would be very, very clear and set some limits. So if somebody is really negative towards me, I'm going to say, oh, ouch, that hurt.
Yeah, and then he would say, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Why are you saying that? He just throws it back in your lap.
Yeah, I would say, I don't think you realize it, but that was a hurtful comment. And then I move on. So I nip it in the bud. But it's really nice to say things, I don't think you intended it, or I don't think you realize it. But that was a real judgmental comment, and I don't want to continue further on this topic. That didn't feel good. Well, it's just my opinion. Well, but your opinion is feeling hurtful towards me right now. And then I move on. So tell me, how was your day at the park? Okay.
I don't even know how to explain him.
Okay. If he's more difficult than that, then that's why I would gradually spend less time with him.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like he's a safe person to have a lot of dialogue with. So I would just keep it very perfunctory. I wouldn't get into long discussions with him.
No, I try to stay away.
Yes, that's
good. But it's my best friend, you know, since we were 12. You know.
Yes, well then have time with her without him.
Yeah, I do that. I've done that.
Good.
But
good.
Get together,
because
it's her and him and her sister.
Yeah.
It's like family, it's a little group of us.
Right. But you really don't deserve, you know, taking in that toxic energy. That's
no.
The other thing.
No.
Just kind of imagine putting up a wall and not letting his negative stuff in, okay, because that hurts your immune system. So
right.
That's the other thing. Just visualize letting his stuff bounce off of you.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the question, Susan.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. And now let's move into pearls. So just say your first name. Put number one, you know, click a number one on your phone dial like you want to ask a question. But instead, I'm going to just have you say your first name and a pearl. What's one thing you're going to take away from the call today? Because by you repeating it on the call, it gives me feedback about what you found was helpful, but it also helps to kind of reinforce it and anchor it for everybody else on the call. So who'd be willing to do that? I'd really appreciate hearing some pearls.
And the first person, please go ahead.
Hello.
I had go great, ahead. I learned a lot of great communication skills from you today. My name is Audra.
Good, Audra.
And I feel like I can take a lot back because this has been hard on my family and my spouse and me being diagnosed with this. So
beautiful. Well, good for you for coming to the call tonight. And thank you for that, Pearl. Who's next?
Kelly, please go ahead.
My name is Kelly, and I just wanted to say that I'm taking away that you're not hearing my joy. You're not a part
you're
of
not meeting my joy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Good, Kelly. It's a really great one, and the more playfully you say it, the better. Who else? Another pearl.
Kathy, please go ahead.
I really liked when you were mentioning, this is Kathy, I'm sorry, the join in the joy. So that is wonderful. What will this mean for you? So kind of expanding, taking the time to expand and share in the good news and be active in the positive words. In the
yes.
I
join
really,
the joy. That's
yeah,
a good mantra.
Yeah, I wrote down a lot of those keys to
that's
like,
great.
Okay, gotta come in.
Excellent. And how about one more pearl before you do the questions at the end?
And the last one is from Stephanie. Please go ahead.
This
great.
Is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Expansive compliments. That's awesome. That's very genuine.
Beautiful. Expand the compliments to include the person.
Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Thank you, everyone, for coming to the call tonight. I wish you all well, and feel free to contact me by email if you have any further questions. Thank you. Go ahead, Katrina.
Okay, now it's time for our just three-question polling. Okay, and our first question for this evening is, I recognize the importance of creating positive emotions within relationships. Press 1 for yes. Press 2 for somewhat. Press 3 for no. And press 4 for not sure. Thank you. Polling has closed for this question. Give me one moment while I tally the results. And our second polling question for this evening is, I learned at least one strategy for making a request versus a complaint. Press 1 for yes. Press 2 for somewhat. Press 3 for no. And press 4 for not sure. Thank you. Polling has closed for this question. Give me one moment while I tally the results. And our final polling question for this evening is, I learned at least one strategy for repairing a relationship when conflict arises. Press 1 for yes, press 2 for somewhat, press 3 for no, and press 4 for not sure. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you can give me one moment to tell me this result, excuse me. Okay, that concludes our survey for this evening. Do you have anything else that you would like to say or anything?
Just thank you to everyone.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this completes your conference call. I hope you have a wonderful evening. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.